How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervive here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. CM Punk. It's all anybody's talking about these days. And largely, that's what we're going to be talking about on this particular show here. As we went off the air last week, we were previewing the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view, talking about all of the different possible scenarios, all of the different ideas, about a million different booking suggestions for that show. And as it turned out, the show ended with CM Punk beating John Cena. They did, in fact, have Vince McMahon command Alberto Del Rio to come on out and cash in the briefcase. And in what was actually the original idea for the finish of the match was Alberto to cash it in and beat him. They changed their minds. And in fact, as Alberto ran down to the ring, he got high-kicked by CM Punk. He got supposedly knocked out. CM Punk slid out of the ring. He jumped over the rail, and he bailed. He left the pay-per-view with the WWE title. And supposedly, his contract has ended. He's out of WWE. He is gone. He left as champion. And of course, per the storyline, that meant John Cena had to be fired. That led us to Raw on Monday night, where Triple H, long story short, came out and announced that the board of directors had voted no confidence in Vince McMahon. He was removed as head of WWE. He was replaced by Triple H. Triple H was not firing John Cena. And Triple H is open to negotiating with CM Punk to bring him back to the company. It's a very long storyline. We'll get into all of the details here, talk about where it could be heading, and a lot more here on this program. Plus, a lot of other news. There's so much stuff going on, as there is every single week. We'll talk about that Vince McMahon storyline. We'll talk about more news from the pay-per-view, the injury, the supposed injury to Sin Cara, which actually ended up being him being written out of the storylines due to a real-life suspension. A suspension which, in more ways than one, he got himself in trouble. We'll tell you all about that, his potential future. Talk about a big fight between Frank Shamrock and Dana White. A real-life Vince McMahon versus Steve Austin feud. A former legend, but he is an all-time legend. He returned to the ring in Japan. We'll tell you about that, how it went down, so much more. Out of time, we'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervive, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. What an opening segment we had. So much news to get into, I couldn't even go over my entire list, but here we are, 2 hours to talk about all of it, so let's get it going. CM Punk left the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view with the WWE Championship. As noted on last week's show, a lot of people had a lot of different ideas. Not only the listeners calling in last week and emailing in, but WWE as well. They had tons of different ideas. There were many different scenarios suggested. And in the end, the scenario they went with was CM Punk leaving with the title, as opposed to one or both of the Money in the Bank winners cashing in. And that was at one point the idea, that one or both of the Money in the Bank winners would cash in, and Alberto Del Rio would likely win with the title or leave with the title after winning it from Punk. And the direction they went, I thought, was the best possible direction, because more than any other scenario, this kept the storyline going. If somebody would have beaten CM Punk, the storyline would have been over. And as of right now, it's continuing. He appeared at an AAW event last night. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. But Mike, your thoughts on the finish of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view?
You know, I thought it was absolutely awesome. And, you know, really, that crowd, Dave Lagana, and I asked him, what was the best crowd to work in front of? Where did you like going the most? And Chicago is the top of that list. And they proved it because, you know, Cena and Punk could very easily steal match of the year because of that crowd. They were absolutely awesome. This was like the Calgary Stampede, the pay-per-view in 1997 in Calgary, where the Hart Foundation in the 10-man tag match. It was just absolute heat, and it went as well. I mean, we were talking last week. It was like the only thing they couldn't do was have Cena beat him clean, and no matter what you thought of what was going to happen, there was excitement, there were, you know, people were jacked up for it, and, you know, people complained a little bit about the Montreal part of it, where Cena had him lock in the STF. I thought that was a great thing, because, you know, Vince comes out, And it's a play, they played off a little bit of everything. There's a little bit of reality. There's a little bit of kayfabe. There's a little bit of this. There's a little bit of that. You know, Montreal comes in. Johnny Ace comes out. He gets potatoed by Cena, which people had to have loved in the locker room. I mean, there was a little bit of everything for everybody, and that's why this thing has been so successful. And they've done a good job rolling along with it, too, and playing into it as far as, you know, Punk showing up at Comic-Con with the bullhorn. And I want to ask Triple H some questions, and, you know, him at this AAW show and him posing with the Cubs and having the thing in his refrigerator. I mean, even Colt Cabana had Zack Ryder on his podcast this week from the CM Punk podcasting studio. So they've really done a good job as far as giving him his leeway and letting, you know, it's been a little bit of everything for everybody, and they've done, I thought, a really good job with it. And Sunday was just, it was fantastic, and that crowd really, really made the night special.
Well, let's go over everything in detail from start to finish, give our thoughts on all of the angles. There's been a lot of stuff going on in the last week with the CM Punk storyline. Started with the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and the opener on that show was the SmackDown Money in the Bank match, which ended with Daniel Bryan winning the briefcase. And if you listen to last week's show, there were various scenarios, some of which actually involved Daniel Bryan. One of them that I suggested that they could do, which is Vince McMahon commanding Daniel Bryan to run out there and attack CM Punk and try and take the title, and instead perhaps Daniel Bryan going out there and laying down for him, you know, and trying to help him out as part of an ROH invasion style storyline or something of that nature. And when they gave him the briefcase, I thought, huh, that's intriguing. That is an intriguing little twist right there, that Daniel Bryan got the briefcase. But as it turned out, nothing became of that, except for Daniel Bryan on SmackDown announcing that he's going to cash in the briefcase at WrestleMania this coming year. He's going to earn his title shot, he said. So that's at least the storyline as of right now. And a very great Money in the Bank opener on that show.
Oh, absolutely. And last, I mean, this may have been, I think this was one of the only predictions I got right all night. Because I thought Bryan would end up winning it and actually be the guy to go out and cash it and be the first one to lose, actually. And, you know, it would be a great ending with Punk and then have him go back to SmackDown and have, you know, Christian make fun of him and you know, heckle him and make, you know, say, hey, my one-day reign doesn't look as bad now because look what you did. But it obviously didn't go that way, but you know, I think the most intriguing thing coming out of this, and obviously Daniel Bryan is, and it gives him a lot of time to, I mean, I got to tell you, WrestleMania could be shaping up to be pretty awesome next year in Miami, so that at least we know right now, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to be able to look into the future and go, at least you know there's going to be one thing that there's no question, no doubt over. I mean, look at the questions we had over this WrestleMania. So it's, you know, that's nice. And the most intriguing thing, though, coming out of this was really Sin Cara, obviously, you know, played up, stretchered out. Sheamus puts him through a table on a ladder. And it, for the reasons that, you know, we can talk about, Sin Cara is actually looking like he may be out of WWE.
Well, before we get into Sin Cara, one thing about the Daniel Bryan deal is it's very interesting. I don't know if they thought about this or if they didn't think about this until after they'd already booked it, but the idea of Daniel Bryan waiting until WrestleMania to cash in, it's interesting because that means that he is challenging for one title. And that means that if the John Cena Rock match is for the championship, which John Cena has promised, and keep in mind that when baby faces make promises, those promises come true. Exact opposite usually with heels, but with baby faces, you make a promise, you keep that promise. That would mean that there's no point in having a Royal Rumble this year.
Not true. It is WWE. So, obviously, that thing is going to be, or could be, very likely will be, a football.
A football?
Yes, it is going to be passed around, or at least the possibility of that thing is passed around with Elimination Chamber, with the Royal Rumble, with the rest of this year's Survivor Series. I mean, they have a bunch of pay-per-views left for this year, too. It's very much within the realm of possibilities. This thing gets bounced around and may end up back with Daniel Bryan at the very end of the deal. But the fact that it can get bounced around, I think, under the circumstances, is pretty likely.
He could also do a heel turn and cash in early. He could lose the briefcase, which actually on the house shows, Alberto Del Rio is doing main events and putting the briefcase on the line, which is interesting.
Good.
Interesting thing for a heel to do, particularly. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see where that goes. Now, Sin Cara was, in fact, stretchered out. He is out for at least 30 days on a wellness policy suspension. And he did an interview for The Record in Mexico and essentially said that he got a steroid shot in his knee. And he did not know why he was suspended, he said. He didn't get it. And WWE was extremely unhappy with his interview. And there were reports that the interview was pulled. In fact, it is not pulled. You can still access it right now. It's still in the Record. But what they do with Sin Cara is up in the air. The entire the circumstances around the wellness failure and everything like that, based on one story that I was told, which I cannot confirm, but I was told this, and based on what he said, it certainly makes sense. I was told that one person believed that he had failed a test, and he said, I will have my doctor get the paperwork to you for this medicine. And I guess they weren't happy with what the doctor provided, or perhaps he didn't get the doctor to provide anything, and that's why this whole thing went down, and that's why he failed his test in June and was not suspended until July. And that certainly does gel with what he claimed, which was that his doctor gave him an injection, and he doesn't know why he failed. Regardless, he is out for 30 days, whatever the story might be, and there is a lot of talk that he will not be back. That was certainly the word in the locker room on Sunday that he was not going to be back. And I guess we shall see. A lot of people that would need to know, people that make upcoming lineups and that sort of thing, I don't think they have any idea. The writing crew has no idea. So it's probably in about 3 weeks they're going to make a decision, would be my guess. So that is a story on Sin Cara.
Yeah, really too bad. It's been really a snake-bitten run here, and it tell you, it makes Averno losing his mask in hindsight. I mean, they could have gotten a lot more out of that, and you know, if Mascara Dorada wasn't in New Japan for the best of the Super Juniors, he probably would have been better suited than La Mystica, and he's the one who kind of, in a way, loses in a lot of this, although they actually are protecting him now.
We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break. We're already up against that break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about Sin Cara before the break, and Mike mentioned Averno, and for those that don't know the story of Averno, Averno is a CMLL wrestler who, when Sin Cara was asked by Triple H, who would you love to work with that you could have great matches with, he chose Averno, his favorite rival. And Averno was signed by WWE. He proceeded to lose his mask in CMLL. And at that point, he continued wrestling in CMLL. And the big question began to be, why did Averno sign with WWE and he's still wrestling and he's still a champion down in CMLL? It made no sense. Well, after Sunday, it makes sense. There is no reason to bring up Averno right now because Sin Cara is suspended. And what that means for Averno's future, I guess we shall see. He did lose his mask, and as Mike mentioned, I think you suggested perhaps he lost his mask too early. All I know is that he lost a mask, and good God is he hot down in Mexico right now. So life is good for Averno. If he gets brought up to WWE, he gets brought up. If not, he's over big in Mexico. So it's not a complete disaster for him like it is for Sin Cara, who did in fact burn his bridges with CMLL. And his options, if WWE does not bring him back, are TNA, which isn't going to pay him any money, and AAA, which would pay him money, but they're not going to pay him nearly as much as he was making in CMLL with all of his dates as a headliner, or with WWE. So it's a tough situation for Mr. Mystico.
No, and no leverage whatsoever, and it's not like he can even go over to Japan either, where it's not like he'd make a whole lot of money over there, and New Japan's got a working relationship with CMLL anyway, and have been using Sombra and Dorada and guys like that, so it wouldn't necessarily matter.
So back to the show here. The second big Money in the Bank ladder match was the Raw Money in the Bank match. Alberto Del Rio did, in fact, win that match. He got the briefcase, and as noted, he attempted to cash it in the main event and got kicked before the bell rang. which means he did not cash it in. So he is currently running around right now with a raw Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah, and I know you and Vinny talked about it this week, too. The graphic of him on Monday, I mean, just, you know, it was kind of ridiculous with his hand there. There's my memory of Alberto from Monday, with the exception of the fact that Ricardo Rodriguez came back, thank God. No surprise there. I thought Del Rio was going to win. I think you did, too. I think most people thought Del Rio was going to win. It was just a matter of what he was going to do afterwards, and again, I don't know when he is going to cash it in, but SummerSlam would actually be nice.
I didn't like the finish, but Randy Orton and Christian had a great match. The stipulations were that if Orton got DQ'd or if Christian got screwed by the referee, then Christian would get the title, and that is exactly what happened. They had a match. It was very, very good, and at the end, Christian spat in Randy Orton's face, and Orton got so mad that he kicked him low right in front of the referee. The referee disqualified him. Christian is the new champion, at which point Randy Orton killed him, gave him two RKOs on the announcer's table. The table was supposed to break, scheduled to break. The table was not cooperating. It refused to break. Vince McMahon flipped out backstage. Orton tried a second time, still didn't break. Orton, should mention this, a very heel crowd here in Chicago. Not just loving CM Punk, but they hated it when, for example, Rey Mysterio nearly won Money in the Bank. They loved it when Miz had a fake knee injury and then came back valiantly to try to win the championship. They hated Randy Orton early. They loved Christian. And then, of course, by the end of the match, when Orton gave Christian two RKOs on the table, and the fans, of course, had chanted one more time, and he acquiesced, then they loved Randy Orton. But it was a very interesting crowd, and Christian currently the champion of the world.
Yeah, and really, for how that, you knew it was going to be because of the way the writer of the match was, which was, you know, it was going to lead to some sort of goofy ending. It was just a matter of what, and you know, the spit into the mouth and into the face and the kick in the crotch, I thought was, you know, it was at first it was like, but then with what happened afterwards, and again, the crowd and the fact that the table didn't break, and you know, I wish the ghost of Terry Funk would just come out sometimes and throw himself through the table, you know, if it didn't break on him. But, you know, I thought that was as good as you could actually go with that. And it looks like they're going to continue it on, I guess, a little bit more. I didn't see much of SmackDown this week, just a little hits and misses of it, but I know they were drawing at the beginning of the episode, so I'm not sure. I thought they were actually going to end it here, at least for a little while, but obviously I'm wrong.
And then the main event. My God, what a main event this was. John Cena and CM Punk, the most ridiculous heat in a WWE match in a long, long time. CM Punk in Chicago. John Cena in Chicago. 40-minute match. They pulled out all the stops. They kicked out of everybody's finishers. They did a million things. And then, of course, at the end, when John Cena had CM Punk in the STF and he pulled him to the middle of the ring, out came Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. And I do have to say, you know, I did not give this match 5 stars. I gave it 4.75. I know that Dave Meltzer gave it 5 stars. I thought there was a fair amount of sloppiness in the match in terms of certain spots. I thought that, you know, the finish, it was just kind of weird. It was like, you know, Vince McMahon chooses to come out at a time when John Cena is about to win the championship. Where was Vince McMahon when CM Punk was nearly winning the championship about a dozen times before that big spot? Just certain things in the match where when I watched it, I thought, this is one of the best matches of the year. Maybe the best match of the year, but it's not perfect. And I don't know. I don't give out a lot of 5 stars, for those of you that have read the newsletter for many years. And that is not to take away anything from this match. It was awesome. And at the end, as noted, Vince sent John Laurinaitis down there to tell the referee. Vince had come out and he was going to do the Montreal finish, but the referee wasn't facing Vince, so the ref didn't see him. So Vince sent John Laurinaitis to alert the referee, at which point John Cena broke the hold, went out, punched out Johnny Ace, jumped back in the ring, immediately got hit with the GTS for the finish. Vince McMahon went and commanded Alberto to come down. Alberto got kicked. Punk escaped. An amazing atmosphere. I mean, if you want to talk about just atmosphere and heat for this match, this was 10 stars. The entire package from start to finish, I gave it 4.75. And if people are upset about that, I don't know what to tell you. That's a great rating. And I thought this was, this will win Match of the Year. I'm almost certain this will win Match of the Year in the Observer Awards. It was something else, and it capped off one of the best WWE pay-per-views of all time.
Oh, yeah, God, absolutely. And I agree with you as far as the rating goes. You know, it's like A++. But, you know, it wasn't perfection. And that's why I said it's not, I guess saying it could steal Match of the Year and probably will steal Match of the Year probably sounds negative towards it, but it's not. I mean, you know, they were, if you've been following, you know, and that's the thing with ROH, that's, you know, Cena and Joe, I don't know if a lot of people, you know, all together think those were the matches of the year that year. I mean, the WrestleMania 20 in New York when you had Benoit, Michaels, and Triple H, and it's a matter of being on a bigger stage, too. And again, the crowd made it as well. And, you know, this match, I think, will go further in history as it goes along, just depending on where this angle goes as well and how it's looked, you know, looked back upon. I think that's going to play into it more as far as the, but again, it's still a classic no matter what, but you know, not many people have seen Nagata and Tanahashi or Tanahashi and Goto or, you know, and there's, you know, a number of matches, Taguchi and Devitt, that other people are going to be able to throw out there that may be more perfect actually in more ways, but it was the crowd, it was the atmosphere, it was the fact that it was WWE. And again, I talked about it last week, when WWE is real good and real focused and they do things, you know, properly, they're still by far leaps and bounds the best. And they did it for that one night. And, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with 4.75. There should not be that many 4.75 matches out there anyway, realistically. People love throwing around high snowflake ratings and overselling things because they're caught up in the moment and they get excited and they don't think of a grander scale. But really, I mean, 4.75, if anybody has a problem with that, I mean, please, it doesn't matter. And again, the rating doesn't matter either. It was awesome, and that's all that truly mattered.
That brings us to Raw, where Vince announced that he was just going to do a tournament for the title, never mentioning this man's name again. And he signed a bunch of matches, Rey versus Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger versus Truth, Kofi versus Alberto, and Alex Riley versus Miz. This was a one-night tournament, which was, I don't know. I always kind of liked the old King of the Ring tournament, but it was a 3-hour pay-per-view with no commercials. This was a 2-hour show with a lot of commercials. And so you had matches in a tournament for the WWE Championship, which was supposed to be the most prestigious, the crown jewel of the McMahon family. And these championship caliber matches were going about 4 minutes. Not a fan. They also did a really weird thing. I mean, my mind was boggled when I learned that Miz is not, in fact, turning babyface. Miz out there with a bum knee fighting valiantly and overcoming all of the odds to cleanly beat two men. He's still a heel. I have no idea what's going on.
I know, and the thing is, it's time for strike while the iron is hot. And have him go babyface. You're trying to boost up Dolph Ziggler. At least it seems to be. He can be more of a heel than Miz can be right now, just because, again, maybe were accident or for whatever reason, when he came limping back out and people's reaction to him and the fact that he is, you know, they're trying to get Punk on, you know, TV shows and stuff like that. Well, the Miz did that, and they really mismanaged him going into WrestleMania, and they've done a lot of dumb things with him, including that crappy title reign. You know, take advantage of this now while it's handed to you. I mean, Chicago and Green Bay or wherever they were on Monday night were not isolated incidents. People can take to this dude. It's okay.
That leads us to next week. The finals are Rey versus Miz. And before they could do the finals, Vince McMahon came out and was going to fire John Cena. So this match ended up being postponed. So tomorrow night on Raw, supposedly, we are going to have a new WWE champion in a Miz versus Rey Mysterio match. Now, of course, Alberto Del Rio is still involved. He could cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase on tomorrow's show. He could wait until SummerSlam. Perhaps he'll be the number one contender since he won that number one contenders match a couple of weeks ago. A lot of different ways they could go, and we'll talk about that after the break. We'll talk about where they're going for SummerSlam, and we'll get into the Vince McMahon angle as well. What was real and what was not in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. If you love this radio show, guess what? You only get to hear it once per week here on the Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92. And by the way, I now have Sirius Satellite Radio in my vehicle, and it's awesome. I've never had satellite radio before.
I told you.
I know, but I have it now, and I've been messing around with it, and a lot of different stations. Of course, Channel 92 carries this show on Sunday afternoons, so if you've got Sirius Satellite Radio, you can always check it out there. If you do not, you can always check it out on the front page of the website if we ever get preempted as well, WrestlingObserver.com. The TuneIn Radio app on your phone, you can listen to Sports Byline, listen to the show every week. Anyway, the point is, one show a week, Wrestling Observer Live. However, if you sign up at WrestlingObserver.com, it's $10.99 a month, and you only have to sign up one time. You don't ever have to sign up again if you don't like it. But I'm telling you, if you enjoy this program and you sign up to WrestlingObserver.com, you will get daily radio shows. You will get 15 to 20 brand new shows every single week. I do shows pretty much every day. We got a ton of other radio hosts as well, including Mike here, Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Adam Summers. We have shows covering pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, wrestling and mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, everything you could imagine that involves men in tights. It's available at WrestlingObserver.com. You not only get all of the new shows, but you get our full archive of shows dating back to June of 2005. So if you do the math, 15 to 20 shows a week, dating back 5 years now, 6 years, dating back 6 years. That's a lot of shows. Thousands and thousands and thousands of shows in the archives. Thousands of hours of audio. Again, $10.99. That's all you pay for a month. And when you pay that, you get full access to everything. All the new shows, all the old shows. If you have a commute, if you work out, listen to audio, if you like to listen to shows during your workday, you will not run out of audio if you sign up. Pretty much guaranteed. And I say it every week, if you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. $10.99 a month, WrestlingObserver.com. Try it out. Head over to the website. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. We have a list of our latest three free radio shows. Click on them, and if you like what you hear, consider signing up. Give it a shot for a month. If you don't like it, it's only $10.99. You never have to sign up again. But I'm pretty confident you're going to like it. In fact, if you would have signed up, if you sign up right now, go to the archives, and this past Wednesday, we had an interview with Bruno Sammartino, a legend, an all-time Hall of Fame legend. 2 hours of Bruno Sammartino. And Mike, before the show, we were talking about this, and in fact, you were at the last ever Bruno Sammartino match.
I was indeed, actually, yeah, in 1987.
How was it?
It was actually quite the emotional thing for me, and something I'll actually always remember, and I do want to actually somehow tell Bruno this at some point. Again, the three long-form interviews that you've done, and you can access the other two interviews as well as this one that just happened, because, as Brian said, every show you can get is in the archive, and they have been awe-inspiring and fantastic. I suggest starting with the first one, where Bruno really talks about his life in Italy and surviving everything that had happened there and nearly dying from it. And it's just incredible. But yeah, my father, who had actually been diagnosed with cancer, I mean, we went to almost all the matches you can imagine between the Cap Center, but especially the Baltimore Civic Center and the Baltimore Arena from, God, 1984 on. And we were at the height of going to those and throughout 86, 87, in 88, and in August of 1987, my dad, you know, like a lot of us, you know, they were wrestling fans growing up, and my father was from New Jersey, and so he grew up, and being an Italian, in an Italian household, he grew up with Bruno Sammartino, and so, you know, he was, you know, starting to get a little bit weaker with cancer and everything, but, you know, you go to a lot of shows at the arena, and, you know, the crowds were always great, but we went to a lot of NWA shows, mostly, where it was just a little bit of a different crowd. That day, you know, Bruno talks about on the show, he hated this time of his life so much that he doesn't really remember how the crowd was. I remember how the crowd was. It was absolutely incredible. It was one of the most seminal moments in that building's history. because it was just a generational thing. I mean, people were, you know, literally hanging from the rafters there as fathers who, superstar Billy Graham was there. And the reaction he got when he came out was absolutely something else. It was during his little feud with Butch Reed, and Don Morocco came out and saved him. But, I mean, the reaction he got, because there were all those guys there, and we used to have tickets almost always, you know, just a couple rows from the front, always on the rail, where they would come out to the ring. And, you know, obviously when the music would hit, you know, all the kids would rush the rail because you want to touch the guys and see them and everything like that. And so we're doing that, and then, you know, they're in the ring, everything's about to start, you know, a little bit before everything's about to start, they're trying to get everything calmed down a little bit, and the ushers are screaming, and, you know, they're looking at us in our direction, all the kids on the rail saying, get back to your seats, get down, get down, get down, and we're looking at each other like, get down, what do you mean? And it's like, I turn around, and there's my father actually standing on a seat, and there's almost all of these other kids' fathers that were standing up on the seats, and it was just something that I'll never forget. You know, a lot of that night in a lot of ways was a blur. You know, Ted DiBiase was on there. They had a really long match with Brutus Beefcake that was awful, that really slowed down the crowd before that main event, too, I guess just to make it extra rowdy. But it was just an amazing scene because the kids are looking at each other like, look at this. You know, our fathers are the ones up on the seats and the pose down at the end and everything. It's just too bad. And it's, I don't know if anyone's got a film of this match out there. I pay a lot of money for it, you know, just to even watch it, you know, let alone own it. You know, not just because I was there, because that was just one of those. It was just a very special night. And in hindsight, because of Bruno leaving and in the way that he did, it was just, you know, it's just too bad that there's no documentation of that, because even though Bruno doesn't remember it and is not a big fan of watching his matches, I was a big fan of that night, and it's something I'll never actually forget.
So you were like 11.
Yeah, I was young. I mean, we would always go to, that was kind of weird too, because I remember seeing, I think that was the first time I had seen Ted DiBiase since they were doing like the Pro Wrestling USA in Georgia. It was teaming up with Gary Juster and with Crockett, and they ran the Baltimore Civic Center, where I think he lost to Ronnie Garvin, the national title. It was either Ronnie Garvin or Jake Roberts. I think it must have been Ronnie Garvin. And then to see him, you know, that many years later in the WWF as the Million Dollar Man, and Sam Houston and Chavo Guerrero the same way, they were on the card. And it was just like, it was kind of odd to see the WWF, you know, circus, because I've been to a couple of shows, but nothing stands out to me like that one did. But I remember a lot more of the NWA shows, and they were just, even though they were both great in a lot of ways, they were completely different. And that's actually one of the reasons I disagree with this pay-per-view being one of the best of all time, was because I went to the Great American Bash in 1989 in Baltimore, which that was an awesome card as well.
Well, one of the best of all time.
Well, all depends on how you look at things. So, and it doesn't matter, because you know what, a great pay-per-view is still a great pay-per-view.
What did you think of the angle where Triple H announced that Vince McMahon is done, and he is taking over, and apparently this is the last we'll see of Vince McMahon until he just comes back like he's done every year for the last 5 years?
You know, the irony of all of this going on was I caught the very tail end of a Bloomberg business channel special, I think on Entrepreneurs, I guess it was, and it was on WWE and on Vince McMahon, and it was Vince McMahon saying that, you know, the lady asked him, you know, they want you to pull back, and you know, can we ever see you on a beach somewhere? And he's just kind of got a little, you know, slight grin on his face. Just, you know, no, I'm going to be the guy that, you know, I may want to do that, and they may want me to do that, but, you know, I'm going to die in this chair. Now, I have two brains about this. One, the obvious thing is, you know, it is probably time. And some of the moves that they've been making as far as the announcers all of a sudden stop hating each other, which is fine. I mean, it was very abrupt, but I'm completely fine with it. You know, obviously Cole and Booker do on SmackDown, but as far as him and Lawler go, got professional. They started doing endings like Orton's kicking the crotch in MMA-style endings. They're calling it wrestling instead of sports entertainment as much. Things like that where they've made actually good moves in that direction. If Vince goes away, this is actually a good time for him to do it. With that said, every year we go through this thing with Vince McMahon not having power, and then on top of that, the longtime fans know, or even fans that just slightly pay attention, obviously know how is this going to play into Punk, which is something that's been floating along very well, and one of the things that will kill it for a lot of the people, even though the McMahons and even though WWE may think that they need to do this to get it out to a broader audience, like they want to understand what's going on, that this thing is playing to too small of a base, is, you know, the incorporation of Vince McMahon and CM Punk together, which I don't think is a move that they really want to make, and it is a move that makes any sense whatsoever. But, you know, it's a very realistic possibility that could happen, and at least the perception of that's in people, you know, in some people's minds, which is a scary thought for them.
Well, there were people that I got an email on Sunday, I think it was actually Monday night, with someone. They were like, I knew it! I knew that Hunter was going to beat Punk for the title. And I emailed him back and said, I would bet that they're not actually going to wrestle. And then on Monday, the next thing you know, Hunter and Ray are doing a deal at Comic-Con, and Punk shows up, and he cuts a promo on Triple H. And at that point, I thought, my God, they might actually do this feud. And I'm hoping they don't. I'm hoping they don't, and I have no idea what Triple H... We're going to find out Monday if Triple H is actually going to be wrestling again, or if he is just going to play the office role on television. I know that around WrestleMania time, the idea was that he'd be back wrestling around SummerSlam, but the idea then was that they might actually do Triple H Undertaker 2 at SummerSlam. That was their original idea, believe it or not, after WrestleMania, was to do that rematch at SummerSlam. Obviously, that's not happening. I shouldn't say obviously. They could shoot the angle on Monday, but I don't expect that to happen. So if he's going to wrestle, who knows? I guess we'll see where they go on Monday. I certainly hope that's not the direction they go, but yes, Punk did show up at Comic-Con. He did cut a promo on Triple H. Triple H cut a promo back on him, and then CM Punk ambled out, and he ambled his way back to Chicago, where last night, in fact, he showed up at an AAW show after a match with a young fella named Gregory Iron, who is, in fact, a wrestler with cerebral palsy. That's right. He was born with a mild case of it, affects some of his limbs, but he's still in there, he's still wrestling, and Punk came out and gave him an inspirational speech and told him he was awesome, the place went nuts, so CM Punk is getting around, and we'll see where this goes on Monday, but what did you think of the Comic-Con and the AAW angles?
I think it's great, and I think it's a great way to play into things as far as, you know, obviously they want to get him on mainstream shows because they want to play off the fact that he's trying to be rebellious and he's not under contract and you know, all the things that go into that. And the way you can do that is by having him do things like this. It's not like he's doing it. It's not like he's showing up on TNA or anything like that. You know, he's doing well-placed, you know, well-timed things that with the most maximum impact you can get that, you know, all the hardcores and the followers, they're going to know it, you know, 100%. All of those people are going to know it. And a lot of people in the mainstream, like, will end up catching on to a little bit that way. So I think that's, again, that's the only way you can do something like this. And it's good that so far they haven't messed any of it up.
And it has been alerted to the WWE fans on their own website that this happened. There just happened to be WWE cameras at Comic-Con when Punk cut the promo on Triple H. It is a key to the storyline was Triple H obviously was playing the role of the new Vince McMahon, and he flat out told Punk in storyline, it is a new era, it is a new regime, and if you'd like to come back to the company, we are open to talking to you. So that could play into the storyline as well. Hunter could just rehire him. A lot of different ways they could go here. We'll see what they end up doing there. They called him on the WWE website the de facto WWE champion. So Monday night, it's going to be a big night. We're going to talk about that more after the break. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Short segment here, so we are going to do a quick email question. This is from Stevie J. He says, isn't it about 99% likely at this point that Punk has a working agreement with WWE, with or without a signed contract, and then they're building up a long-term angle between Hunter and Punk due to the latter calling him a doofus on live television? I don't mean a title angle, just Hunter bringing Punk back to television simply for the satisfaction of screwing with him. Well, Obviously, he's under contract. I would say he has a brand new signed deal. I don't have that. I have not seen the contract or anything like that. But, I mean, if you follow WWE for any length of time, or really if you've followed the entire history of WWE, there is zero chance that a guy not under contract is holding the WWE title. I mean, zero chance. He signed, I would guess that he signed about 3 weeks ago, actually. As soon as they started really building everything around him, I mean, they don't build their company around a guy who's not under contract. So I would say that he has a signed, sealed, deliver long-term deal. And yeah, it does appear they're doing something with Hunter and Punk. And in fact, you know, I don't know when they came up with all of these storylines, but just all I can say is that, I think I mentioned this last week, it is no coincidence that Triple H and Stephanie were brought up in that original Punk promo. It is no coincidence that John Laurinaitis was brought up. You know, you're going to be seeing a lot of the things that CM Punk talked about in that promo playing out on television over the next couple of weeks. I know that, when the promo was over, there were people saying that, you know, Vince McMahon didn't know what Punk was going to say and it was all off the cuff and only Punk knew. That's not true. The writers didn't know, that is true, but Vince McMahon and CM Punk and Kevin Dunn and probably Triple H, I mean, they all were in on this whole thing, and they all had a storyline in their head. Now, how that plays into ROH, well, that's something we're going to talk about after the break. There is not, according to sources on both sides, a working relationship between the two companies, and CM Punk is not going to show up in ROH. Which brings us to some very interesting questions, which we're going to tackle when we come back. So, 7 minutes, we'll be back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about Ring of Honor, and I was talking about this on a different show a couple of days ago, the strangeness that is this angle. This angle is like nothing we've really ever seen before, in the sense that, well, I guess there was a kind of a variation of this in the Monday Night Wars, which we can talk about later, but what essentially happened here is you've got this CM Punk fella, and the angle is that he's no longer under WWE contract, and he's taken the title. And in his promo 3 weeks ago, he mentioned that he was going to win the title and he was going to take it to ROH, he said, or New Japan. Now, the weird thing about this is that there have been no talks about CM Punk going to Ring of Honor. Now, Ring of Honor's first television taping just happens to be in several weeks, I think it's mid-August, in Chicago. Chicago! So
which is not, by the way, been one of their super stronger places. So you could have had it in another place, maybe, for maximum impact.
Sure, but this was announced long before any of the CM Punk stuff started.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what's odd about this is that unless CM Punk is, like, back on television Monday or next week, you know, if they're still doing the storyline where he's unsigned by WWE, And that taping comes around, it doesn't matter if he goes on his Twitter or if ROH insists he's not going to be there or if WWE insists he's not going to be there. Everybody is going to expect that he's there. And throughout the show, you're probably going to have people going nuts chanting CM Punk. And this is not like your regular, this is not like false advertising where ROH has promised he's going to be there. ROH has never even hinted he's going to be there. They have nothing to do with any of this. Yet in some ways, they could end up a victim of these circumstances by having their tapings deluged with chants for CM Punk when there's no chance he's going to be there. So Mike, we'll get your thoughts on this after the break. A very strange situation. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are talking weirdness with CM Punk and Ring of Honor. There are no talks between WWE and ROH about CM Punk showing up at the Chicago tapings. But the tapings are in Chicago. And if CM Punk is not a regular WWE character by that date, there's a very good chance that during those tapings, everybody is going to be chanting CM Punk and expecting him to be there. Even though there's no chance of him being there at this point. a weird, weird situation.
You know, but and obviously in my pipe dream scenarios, as well as many other people's, you know, there is a way that this could happen. You know, the Kings of Wrestling and Colt Cabana, we've talked about that, you know, over time. And it would be great. I mean, WWE really should do this. I mean, they mentioned Ring of Honor before. Obviously, Matt Hardy did it with the whole thing with Lita and Edge going on. And when Daniel Bryan wrestled Chris Jericho, if I recall correctly. And they bring up ROH before. And they're not a threat. Even though they're going to be on Sinclair, I mean, they're not in many major markets or on one NBC affiliate that will actually go well. I think it's in Tampa because it's on after Saturday Night Live. It's Saturday at 1 o'clock, so it may actually turn out to be pretty good. I don't know. I would love to see it happen because they should work with them. I mean, look at Florida. I mean, look at Andy. They should really be having some sort of relationship with Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor, you know, they could use a little bit, too. They want to be more entertainment than what they were. And obviously, you know, backlash against guys like Bob Evans and Mike Bennett and some of the things that they do, some people get annoyed at. But, you know, that's what they need to do. And I think it's something that can benefit both of them. You know, they never have to mention Ring of Honor after this, but if guys pop up on there, I mean, give them something to do after FCW, or at least the possibility of doing something like that. I mean, look at all this stuff with Andy right now. Okay, and no offense, you know, but it's not doing it for me. I mean, the fact that they do personality pieces is good, and they do vignettes on guys, like and the stuff they did with Karma, and when they do that stuff, it's really good. And this was a well-done little personality piece to keep, you know, Andy in our minds. The thing is, I don't want Andy in my mind. I really don't. I know he's Silent Rage. Yes, he grew up, you know, in a rough town right next to a meth lab, and Tyson Kidd had a response to this on Twitter when he was just, you know, a little response that said, man, I grew up rough, too. And I'd rather watch Tyson Kidd than see, you know, vignettes of Andy because he's not, you know, is he ready in Florida? No. You know, if he would just go down, maybe get beat up by Punk and his crew and goes down to Florida for a while, and then he's a guy that could use something like a bridge. Alex Riley in a different world, and obviously Riley is maybe a little bit more than his time, but can you imagine if Alex Riley would have gone away for a while or never, we've never would have saw Alex Riley, but he was in somewhere like ROH for a year, how much he would learn and how much better he would be like right, you know, in just a year, because he's got the whole package except for he's not really that great of a wrestler yet because he hasn't wrestled that much. And so a working agreement with them, obviously this is, could all be pipe dreamy, but yeah, I mean, it's something that could absolutely work and something that they should really actually do. You know, nobody pays anybody anything or however it would work, and WWE guys can't appear on TV or limited on TV, but never on a pay-per-view or a DVD sale or something like that. I mean, you can work around a lot of things to actually make that work, and it's something that should work. And as far as the angle goes, I think it's something that could work too, again, because of the Kings of Wrestling and because you would have guys that are pretty damn talented. I mean, it just, Tyler Black and guys like that, where you could bring them in there and just, you know, get them more going and get them more, you know, mouthpieces. One of the biggest problems guys have, they got to script everything for them. They never get a chance to talk. Can you imagine if Tyler Black rolled back into ROH and seeing Richie Steamboat in some sort of deal to face off against the world's greatest tag team, what that could do for Steamboat and Black as far as being more in the entertainment mode? I mean, that's what they need to do to build the future. You know, their biggest gaping holes, the farm system and how they develop guys, you know, it's troubling. For every Alex Riley who seems to be catching on a little bit, there's guys like, you know, Johnny Jeter and guys like that who, you know, Dolph Ziggler's been able to survive a lot in his time there. Look how many changes he's gone through and everything else. He's one of the rare ones. They need to keep building, and this is a good opportunity for them to do it. At least the option is there. The, you know, all the room in the world is there. Will it actually happen? Probably not. But
here,
it's nice to think about.
Here's something to think about, though. Let's look at it from this perspective here. I don't disagree with anything you say, but let's look at this. Let's step in the shoes of ROH for a second. You know, regardless of what the realities are of Sinclair, and we're not going to know for a while here, the ROH side firmly believes that this is a big deal. This is a huge step for them. I don't know if maybe the idea is that they are very confident that pro wrestling on a family of stations that you know, there are a lot of affiliates in the South, and wrestling has always had a long storied history in the South. That ratings will be good enough that perhaps at some point they can use these ratings to get themselves and leverage themselves into an even better television deal. The point is, they really feel like they're making a go at this on their own. And granted, they're using people like the World's Greatest Tag Team and that sort of thing, but I don't know. In fact, I could tell you from talking to a lot of people in ROH that, you know, obviously they love CM Punk. Obviously, those that are watching, they're you know, honestly, do I think that Jim Cornette is watching any WWE or has any idea what's going on with CM Punk? I think he's got a clue, but he ain't watching Raw.
No.
He's not watching Raw. And, I can tell you this from talking to people. There are people there that do not want really anything to do with the CM Punk thing. And it has nothing to do with CM Punk because they like CM Punk. But the whole deal is, if CM Punk, let's just say that CM Punk came to Chicago. And I'm not saying he's going to, because as of this moment, he's not. And there are no talks of him going. But let's just say he did. So what do you do? Because WWE is not going to let him lose to anybody. So if he's going to go in there, he's maybe just going to cut a promo. It's not going to lead to a match. And if it leads to a match, it's not a match that he's going to lose. You know, if it's a match that has a finish, the finish would have to be him winning. You know, all of this stuff is not going to even air on ROH TV until, like, the fall, when God knows where the CM Punk storyline is going to be at that point. I mean, you know, if they had a working agreement with WWE and they could bring in guys for programs like they did in Ohio Valley back in the day, that's one thing. But if, you know, if something happened here, it would be WWE giving him to them for one day, and there would be a lot of stipulations involved, and they would have very little creative control over it. And I mean, I don't really see what the upside would be, except that on their first television, perhaps, they'd have who in July was the hottest star in the business. And God only knows where it's going to be in September. You know, you're taking a gamble. Maybe it'll be a lot hotter. Maybe it'll be way cooled off. There's no way of knowing. So I don't know. It's a real interesting situation, but, you know, people jumping at, oh my God, this would be so great for ROH. You know, from their perspective, this wouldn't necessarily be so great.
Yeah, but the way it could actually be great and the way it could actually work for them, even with a bunch of riders and stipulations attached, and really the biggest thing overall would be dedication to the angle. When they film that first TV, even if he's on there in some sort of role, it may just get a couple of extra eyeballs onto the product. And for anybody who's actually seen it over the last year, year and a half, and some of the angles that they've done and some of the things that they've done a very good job where they could hook some people. If they got some new eyeballs, I mean, they can hook them. I mean, obviously the iPay-per-view is a weird thing to try to judge things by, but a little build here, a little build here, where there might be a wrestling fan who's Punk's going to be on there, even doing an interview. He just hears he's going to be on there, sees it for the first time, and I bet you they could suck him in, you know, with that first show. I would assume they're going to go balls out for it, so I think they could actually hook him, and that could actually work that way. And the thing is, that last show that they tape will be, you know, will air October 8th. Obviously, that would be a lot of dedication, but it's still also a couple weeks away from the pay-per-view. You can just say that, you know, them, anything you're going to do to sell later on, no Punk can't be in, but there's ways you could actually make it work a little bit, maybe play it into something with the Kings of Wrestling, or play it into the fact that everybody knows who's an ROH fan, that Colt Cabana is actually working under, you know, no deal right now. I mean, there's ways you can make it work for those first three episodes, but the dedication would have to be there from WWE side, and obviously that wouldn't work, and obviously the restrictions that they put on them would have to not be that bad. But, you know, if they had dedication to keep this thing going, it's a way to, you know, it's, again, some stuff you can use to keep it going.
We're going to talk more about this after the break. We also have a lot of news to discuss today, tons of news. So that's coming up here in a moment. Plus your emails, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and boy, do we have a ton of it here. Let's do a couple of the email questions, and then we'll jump back into the news. This person here, jumping into the TNA front, is there any talk of TNA possibly doing their own CM Punk-like angle? I have not heard anything, but I would bet dollars to donuts by the end of the year they do something almost identical. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, it wouldn't stun me all that much, but I can actually see them doing it after this thing with CM Punk cools off, maybe like 2 months after that. Yes, I could see them doing it and then doing it very poorly.
Did you watch Impact this past Thursday night?
I saw bits and pieces of it, at least, you know, a good start for me because we were recording the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare where we actually ran down the first couple days of the G1 Climax and our predictions for New Japan's biggest event, which, by the way, also will not feature CM Punk, although CM Punk against anyone on that roster, especially Nakamura or Tanahashi, would be awesome, but alas, that's probably not going to happen, so... I did see a little bit of it. I turned it on and Miss Tessmacher was bending over. I thought that was a good way to start the show. Apparently, Sarita, or what's the deal? She's got a Ebola flesh-eating virus where her face now needs to be covered up. But that's how it started for me, and I saw a little bumps and clicks throughout it, but it just didn't keep my attention.
The tournament, the G1 tournament is one thing, but the Bound for Glory tournament, you know... I'm not going to bury it too badly because...
You lived through the Hard 10 tournament, that's why.
I've seen a lot of worse tournaments. But with that said, I just don't care about this tournament at all. Wacky scoring. The leaderboard is shown sparingly. Which is
Crimson still... Like, are all the older heads still at the bottom and Crimson and the younger guys, quote-unquote, are still on top?
The only thing I can tell you off the top of my head is that Crimson is in first place, I believe, with 31 points, and he was not on the show at all this week. There are about five people tied for second place, and then there's a bunch of guys at the bottom that have almost no points. That's literally all I can tell you. And the matches are like being done completely at random. You know, it's not like a round-robin tournament or a single elimination tournament. It's just... We're going to make a bunch of completely random matches, and guys are going to get completely random points. For example, there was a ladder match this week where, randomly, the winner just got 10 points. So, I don't care about this tournament at all. And I guess we'll see if anybody cares at Bound for Glory.
I would probably say not, although they seem to be maintaining that 1.3, so still that better than a 1.2. Too bad they just can't convert any of those people to buy the pay-per-views.
Actually, the Midsummer Nightmare show, which they were building up in many ways bigger than the pay-per-view, that show only did a 1.2. This week's show did a 1.3, actually 1.25. So, essentially, it's the same number. But TNA is where it is, and there's really nothing new to even report. Except that Ric Flair...
I'm very disappointed in myself, though, Brian, because I did miss the TNA show that was taking place about 40 minutes from me, and I actually wanted to go to that because from what you say and from what everybody says, the TNA house shows are great. I didn't have a chance to do that because I had to watch just too much boxing.
You will not regret if you go to a TNA house show. It's almost guaranteed. I mean, it's you just have to imagine TNA taking place in an alternate universe. You know, people that are heels on TV are baby faces here, and the matches that are usually like 2 minutes on television are like 12 minutes here, and it's a different world, and it's great, much better than Impact.
Well, anything's much better than Impact. We got to stop talking about Impact.
Let's talk about Japan. Tell us about the G1 and the return of Kenta Kobashi.
Yeah, actually, the G1 is going to be starting up here very, very soon. I got to pull up the exact date here, but this is, I believe, the 21st annual tournament. And, you know, it kind of has its roots back in the IWGP Grand Prix days. You know, the most famous one, I think, for people listening would be the Hulk Hogan-Antonio Inoki match. And, you know, the G1 is just their big summer tour that they do, which leads, you know, obviously the guy wins that, and the champion is usually in it and sometimes wins it, but it's usually a case where they're building a contender up and they bring in outside guys from other places, and it's just a battle of who's going to be the number one contender in New Japan. And it really is it's a great tournament, and the way New Japan has been just absolutely fantastic this year, they really have, and it's going to be probably a little bit unfortunate when it gets to be the end of the day. A lot of people in America won't realize how good that they are. But with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Hiroki Goto and Nakamura, and a lot of the stuff they've done all year long has clicked great. And the G1, let me actually pull up here the exact date. And as I do that, Kenta Kobashi, who has been out for a long, long time now, cancer had, you know, a million and one issues that have plagued Kobashi, came back in a tag match in Noah and lost to Jun Akiyama. And, you know, in Japan, how it works is, you know, if a guy's out for a long period of time, they never win that first match back. They always lose, and he was on the losing end of the match against Akiyama, and it's going to be interesting to see, because Noah is in such a disarray and is at such a low point. They cannot draw anything. It's really, really sad. They've had a lot of division in the locker room, and it's just questionable as to how long they're going to actually last for. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Kobashi, if he does migrate anywhere out on his own, or he stays loyal to Noah to try to do something to bring fans back and to bring eyeballs back. And unfortunately, in his physical state, he's not going to be able to do that. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can do it with his aura. Now, in New Japan, they've actually brought in some guys from CMLL for the G1. La Sombra and Strongman. Now, for people who haven't seen Strongman, think of Scott Steiner and Ron Waterman. And then just, you know, he's just absolutely a massive, huge muscle man who cannot wrestle whatsoever. Him in singles matches in Japan on, like, the third match of the show makes sense to me. But the fact that he's in the G1 and will be wrestling men like Minoru Suzuki and MVP and, you know, Tenzan, who is, you know, banged up and hurt and probably has got to cringe seeing the possibility of facing this guy. It's an interesting move for New Japan to make, and I don't know why it's the case. La Sombra being in there against these guys, too, is going to be really interesting. I'm surprised he's actually in it. But, it gets to be intriguing with a lot of the matches that you can get out of this thing, and obviously Minoru Suzuki being in it and all the New Japan standbys that are in it, as well as Lance Archer, who is the random American who ended up in this thing.
Did you get a report on how Kobashi looked?
Did not yet. So, sure, that will be coming out here shortly. Haven't had a chance to really go through it and check.
Aside from losing, of course.
Well, that's... You know, I'm sure, I mean, again, I'm not sure how long the match went either here. I can try to find that out. But obviously, it's probably going to be on TV pretty quick and on news reports and things like that. So I'm sure we're going to find out. But, you know, regardless of how he looked, the thing is he can't keep it up. I mean, he could have actually magically turned back time, which I'm sure he didn't do. But even if he could, he's in such a position where it's just he's not going to be able to do it much. And it's a kind of just it's a different day, because outside of New Japan and Dragon Gate, which just drew a 9,000 in Kobe, I mean, that's it. And they're two completely different styles. And it's, you know, it's a weird shakeout when it comes to Japanese wrestling, where it's New Japan is so incredibly strong and everybody else is just trying to struggle for the piece of the puzzle.
While you're on a roll, tell us about Frank Shamrock and Dana White. They're having a Vince McMahon, Steve Austin style feud.
I guess you would say that. Yes, I guess some insults had taken place on Twitter. And Twitter, does Dana White now get a bonus? Can he give himself a bonus for playing into the fact that that Frank Shamrock has challenged him to a fight? And it is Austin McMahon-like, and obviously Frank Shamrock not being liked by Dana White and vice versa for all the issues they've had. But, yeah, Dana White made fun of Frank for still having braces. Mike Swick has actually gotten involved in all this. And, you know, if I'm Frank Shamrock, of course I challenge Dana White to a fight. He's got the DVD or the documentary coming out that he and Kurt Bauer is working on. So, I mean, there's a real, you know, good chance that once his contract ends with the Strikeforce, that Zuffa is not going to re-sign him. I'm one of those people that say it's okay to have a guy like Frank Shamrock around, even though Dana White may hate him. It's better to kind of have him lingering around as long, because he's not going to make an ass out of himself. He's not going to do anything to really get himself in trouble or anything like that. He's personable. He's got connections. He's a good guy to have around, even though he's your antagonist, because I think you can do more with him. You know, guys like Boss Root and people like that, it does make sense. Tito Ortiz could be in that camp, too, at some point if he would stop, you know, using Twitter in the way that he likes to use Twitter.
What did Mike Swick have to do with all of this?
Well, then who was the other name that got dragged into all of this?
I know about Frank and Dana. And the interesting thing is, I'd have to go back and check, but off the top of my head, maybe except for the very, very beginning, but I don't think Frank Shamrock is being used at all by Strikeforce at this point.
Well, Swick, the thing with Swick was Dana said that Swick claimed Shamrock shouldn't be involved in anti-bullying campaigns since he used to bully people in the gym.
That's right.
And then Shamrock said, well, real men fight their own battles. So he watched him beat up a girl and then celebrate. Yeah.
Well, it was, I don't know. This whole thing is just preposterous.
But, you know, again, it's to me.
You know what? The last person that challenged Dana White to a fight was Tito Ortiz, and of the two of them, Tito was the guy that pulled out.
That's true.
And again,
Frank Shamrock, good idea for Frank Shamrock. I think this is maybe I'm too desensitized because of boxing, but, you know, I can handle this as long as it doesn't become a focal point of anything or beat on too much. I mean, I have no problem with this type of stuff.
Yeah, but it's just wacky. You know, this is a bad use of Twitter, in my opinion.
Well, look, with all the injuries they've got going on and they're staring down the barrel of a craptastic Philadelphia show, I mean, they could handle, you know, a little bit of wacky is okay right now. It might brighten some spirits.
A completely cursed show. I want to talk about that a little bit after the break. Got a lot of other news as well, so get ready. We got one more big segment here on the show coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this show, we do shows every single day on the website. It's $12.95. That's the price. Telling you right now up front, it's $12.95 per month. You can sign up for 1 month. You can sign up for recurring, where we bill you every month. You can do one time and never again just to give it a shot. But I think if you like this show and you listen to this show loyally every single week, one time, then I pretty much can guarantee you'll enjoy listening to the show every single day. 15 to 20 brand new shows every single week. Tons of different hosts, tons of different shows. We cover pro wrestling, we cover mixed martial arts. I personally do shows pretty much every day. Myself, Dave Meltzer, Vince Verhey, guests. I got Lance Storm on every other week. I've got a big name coming up in the next couple of days that I'm not going to reveal here for fear of jinxing it. We had Bruno Sammartino on last week. Tons and tons of guests. Some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. You name them. Ric Flair, Mick Foley, Steve Austin has been on the program. Bruno Sammartino is noted. Lance Storm is on every other week. Chris Jericho has been on the show. The list goes on and on. All of these, of course, available in our archives. Bryan Danielson, one of the most popular shows that we've ever done was with Daniel Bryan. It's in our archives right now. So go up there, check it out. We have free radio shows if you scroll down the right-hand side of the page. Just download them to your MP3 player. Take it to work. Take it to your commute tomorrow. Take it anywhere that you like to listen to your audio, perhaps your work, you like to listen to audio during the day. And once you're done with them, just think, if you sign up, thousands and thousands and thousands of shows in the archive. Every show we've ever done dating back to 2005 at your disposal. So your disposal, not your disposable. Anyway, check it out. WrestlingObserver.com. That's the plug. Mike, you're laughing.
I'm not laughing at all. I was just actually going to shed a little tear because I don't believe that I got my press credentials in time. I believe I was a little bit late, which, you know, when it comes to the UFC and how they open their press center at the times that they do, to the fact that I was a little bit late on sending in the application and I have to go to the Philadelphia show on August 6th as just a spectator is very disappointing to me, because I would rather get the free food, because that may be the best part of this show as a very depressing advance. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Dana White can give away enough tickets for this show if it's as bad as has been reported. And then just an absolutely jinxed show for especially the 205-pound guys that were scheduled to appear on this thing. And we've ended up with it all shaking out after a bizarre story that involved, no, not a bizarre story, but a weird story that involved Lyoto Machida who ended up wanting Anderson Silva-type money to come in on short notice to face off against Rashad Evans in a fight that was as a replacement for Phil Davis, who was a replacement for John Jones, and Tito Ortiz turned down the fight. Then he takes the fight, and Matsushenko would have been a nuclear option. He ends up getting hurt and is off the card. It's just been a spectacle. What's forgotten about in this is Vitor Belfort trying to come back in a what is, to me, kind of an interesting match with Yoshihiro Akiyama, but unfortunately, that's the semi-main event. They got Matt Hamill facing Alexander Gustafsson on short notice, which I think Gustafsson is actually, I really like him a lot, and I think he's got a real good chance to win that fight. They've also got Chad Mendez and Ronnie Yah, but as good as that is, and is I guess as good as that can possibly be, I don't know if I'd have Hamill on a prelim show to try to get somebody to buy a fight that they're already going to have problems selling. Again, who knows? Sometimes it's the cards that you don't expect, where your expectations are low, that really end up surprising you. But even though there's some exciting guys up and down the card, you got Nam Phan on it, and you got, you know, there's some good guys up and down it, but realistically, at the end of the day, it's not a flashy card. Is it a card worth $50 as it stands right now? No. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people just wait and see what the report is coming out of it before they go ahead and order it. And it's just, you know, again, it's sometimes things like this happen. There's just bad things that happen when you can't control a whole lot of stuff. And, you know, when you have so many pay-per-views and you have so many shows, things like this are going to happen. And it's just, that's why you continue to build stars and you continue to try to have as many options as you possibly can. I mean, if you think about it, the fact that this ended up with Rashad Evans and Tito Ortiz, if you really think about it, isn't that bad. Because with the injuries that happened, imagine if it was Rashad Evans and Phil Davis. You got Phil Davis, who's a guy who went to Penn State. You got that going on. He's Mr. Wonderful. He's got the Mr. Perfect arm bar. And I mean, he's got a lot of tools. It's great. Probably would have been a great place for him to try to step up, but Rashad Evans is a big step up. And this is something karma-wise, you know, Tito Ortiz getting the big win, short notice. He comes back, so it's a no-lose situation. It's got more star power. It's a rematch of a match that ended in a draw. It wasn't all that great, but at least you can have that storyline playing into it. So in some ways, you know, this whole thing ended up being better than it should have been. It's just at the end of the day, I think financially from how it sounds, it's looking like a down point.
My God, Mike, breathe.
Jim, see, professional wrestling taught me everything. Like Ric Flair and Ray Stevens taught me how to save money, and Jim Cornette actually taught me how to talk.
I was going to get a line in there about how I thought you were shedding a tear about my plug, but then you went for 5 minutes. Pretty impressive.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I need a drink here. Where's the Powerade?
Now, going back to 133 here, this show, 7 card changes so far. 7.
Yeah, Rogério Nogueira and Rich Franklin. And the reason Rich Franklin is not, and again, it would have at least provided some name value. The reason he's not on the card is because it was just too damn late at that point when Rogério Nogueira pulled out to find him a replacement.
7 changes. We still have 2 weeks left, you realize.
Yeah, it's more than possible. Something else could drop out. And I'm going to be interested.
I guarantee it.
Well, I mean, at 40, I'm just interested to see the attendance, too. I mean, 4,500, because a lot of the Philadelphia market can get to Newark pretty easily. I mean, you know, there was Pittsburgh, again, which Pittsburgh's long. It's easier to get from Philadelphia to Newark easily. But for the prices that they're charging, the fact that it was only 4,500 a couple of weeks ago, and nothing there. I mean, there's no pop in that area or anything like that right now for it. It's just, it's a little bit cringeworthy, especially because of how many. I'm surprised they didn't try to stack this with New Jersey fighters and stuff like that. It's like having, you know, guys like Pellegrino and Miller and guys like that on the cards in Newark, and you know, John Jones obviously being proclaimed from up that area. I mean, you want to do things like that usually, and it doesn't seem like they took advantage of that when you have so many New Jersey wrestlers and the way the sport is there, what they're cranking out, that they didn't try to do that more on this show.
I predicted within the next 2 weeks, Vitor Belfort pulls out. I shouldn't even have said that.
He would be the name, yeah. If you had it in the pool, he'd be the name, but I'll give him some credit. I'll say, and hopefully this is no jinx, it'll be somebody on the undercard. Let's say Johnny Hendricks.
See, we're going to get in trouble for doing this, but listen, I have absolutely no inside information. The only reason I chose Vitor Belfort's name is because I feel it is a certainty that someone is going to pull out, and I feel it is a certainty that it's just got to be another one of the big names.
Well, see, by
and he's one
that,
of the last big names left.
Akiyama's pulling out.
Sure. So it's got to be the semi-main gets screwed up on this show. So
oh,
I'll
by the way, Alexio Sakara is on this show, and the last time they were in Philadelphia, which was the first time they were in Philadelphia, UFC 101, August 8, 2009, Talis Leites, that fight took place, and that was painfully, painfully awful. The fight in the girl fight in the crowd that, the UFC even had to acknowledge and laugh at a little bit was, I mean, a zillion times better than that fight.
Dana White met with Vince McMahon lately and got a lot of people talking. And I know that some people were talking. Essentially, I was, I don't know if it had anything to do with me, but I was doing a show about a week ago, about 4 or 5 days ago, and it was with Zach Arnold, actually. We were talking about the UFC television situation, and we were talking about how UFC wants to start their own network, and WWE wants to start their own network, and it's very hard to start a network, and you got to have a lot of content, and I was basically, purely as a hypothetical, I was saying, what do you think are the chances that UFC and WWE would pool their resources and create a combat sports channel, and they use both of their tape libraries to supply programming for this channel, and you both take the risk on the channel, as opposed to each doing it separately? Purely hypothetical, okay? I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but I have now seen people predicting that the reason, or not predicting, but suggesting, that the reason that Vince McMahon and Dana White met was to discuss that very thing, pooling resources for a network. Okay, I cannot tell you with like 100% certainty, but I'm pretty darn confident that that has absolutely nothing to do with what their meeting was about. And Dana's being very tight-lipped about it, and there is a deal in the works that involves Brock Lesnar. It has nothing to do with Brock Lesnar going to WWE or having matches or doing WrestleMania or anything like that. It is a non-wrestling, non-television deal that is in the works, and I'm pretty sure that's what they were talking about. And it's not something that's going to change the world or anything like that. It's just some sort of business deal. So I'm pretty sure that's what the meeting was about. So suffice to say, people are reading a lot more into it than I think was actually there.
Well, and there's a million and one things that meeting could have been about, from using his old music or anything, you know, using for anything that thing could have been about, but they could not work together that long. And the fact is, neither one needs the other one to have enough content for there. They really don't. I mean, they really, really don't. At the end of the day, they have enough content. I mean, the video on demand and what UFC is building, and obviously, you know, WWE's got enough. I mean, they can have stuff on there going in a loop and sell 6 hours from, I don't know, 2 o'clock to 8 in the morning of pay programming until you get enough original shows like, you know, like Legends of Wrestling, and they have craptastic game shows, and there's a lot of other wacky stuff that you could do to get on a network. And the UFC, I think, has got more than enough now, too. They can start creating their own panel shows and doing things like that where they just, in a perfect world, especially for the viewer, I think it would be really awesome to have something like that. But neither one would want the other side. They don't need the other side to do it. And they couldn't work with the other side, you know, on enough stuff to really make it work.
I guess we should talk a little bit more about some upcoming shows. There are a bunch of UFCs coming up. We've got a string starting in August of like 5 weeks in a row. UFC 133 is August 6th. That's followed by August 14th, UFC Live, Hardy versus Lytle, which is going to be taking place in Wisconsin, of all places.
I like that show a lot more than I like the UFC 133.
It's a good card. A lot of good names on the card. Hardy and Lytle is the main event. You got Ben Anderson on the show. You got Donald Cerrone on the show.
And they're struggling. They're struggling to get matches on the Philadelphia. And the fact is, if they would just take a couple of these 87 million great, or at least possibility of really action fights, and just put them, I mean, Benavidez, Garcia, Cole Miller, Volkman, I mean, Kasarsis, these guys are all on the undercard of that show. Eddie Wineland, who I believe is a Jersey guy, they're all in the undercard of that show. I'm surprised he couldn't just bump a couple of them up there just to try to push action.
So that's the 14th, and that's followed the very next week, actually a couple of weeks later, UFC Fight Night, Shields versus Ellenberger. And then 135 on September 17th, Jones versus Rampage. You've also got
You forgot about Silver Okami.
That's right. You've got some Strike Force. Yeah, UFC 134. You also have some Strike Force shows in there. It's going to be a crazy couple of months for mixed martial arts after actually a period here where, quite frankly, it's been kind of slow. We're going to talk about this more after the break. We're going to wrap up the show as well. Any final comments coming up after the break? Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, tomorrow is a huge day. We're going to find out how the CM Punk storyline continues. They have promised the first day on the job for Triple H as the new Vince McMahon, and the finals of the Rey Mysterio, Miz, I guess Rey Mysterio and Miz are the finalists in the WWE Championship Tournament. And if you had to make a prediction for tomorrow night, do you expect one or either of those two men to win the championship, or is Alberto Del Rio going to cash it in and beat whoever wins the title?
I would have Miz win it. You know, play him, you know, double baby faces through the match. Have Miz win it. Have Del Rio come out, bash his knees, banged up. You know, Miz wrestled three times in a couple days, do all that sort of stuff, and have Del Rio win it. I think wouldn't be all that bad of an idea.
Problem with that idea is that Miz is not supposed to be a babyface.
Well, I mean, I would say go that direction. Whether they will or not, I don't know, but I can't see being Mysterio, so I figure it's got to be Miz or Del Rio. And, hey, how else are you going to play that one then outside of he just takes a cheap shot? But I don't think, you know, Rey wearing down Miz that much? I don't know. I don't think it'll work.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens. That is tomorrow. And it is the finals of the deal, and I guess we're going to hopefully get some matches for SummerSlam as well, because that is coming up here very soon, and we don't have anything as of this point.
No, three weeks away, pretty much, so yeah, they need to get on the stick pretty much now, unless they got a surprise up their sleeve.
So that is, of course, tomorrow night. We've also, on the website, got a bunch of big things coming up. I want to remind everybody, if you're a fan of old-school wrestling, consider getting a subscription this week just to hear the Bruno Sammartino episode. If you're an old-school fan, you're $10.95. Believe me, it's going to be worth it just for the Bruno Sammartino interview. He is the best man in the world. He is our favorite interview, and he's awesome. But if you love that interview, just jump into the archives, and we've got three or four others. He's just coming off heart surgery, and he's doing pretty darn well. So you can get the update.
He's got the heart of a 40-year-old.
He's going to have the heart of a 40-year-old, which is better than me and Mike. That's it for today, everybody. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. Check out WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next time. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.